All right, so I guess here we go.
You're listening to the Legion of Reason.
Right, welcome to the 202nd edition of the Legion of Reason Diversion or Lord for May 7th through 2017. Yours truly, the Supreme Reverend Dr. Randy Tyson, is joined by his eternally misogynized Christine co-host to bring in another potpourri episode. Later we have more on the fallout from a Saskatchewan judge's decision that funding of non-Catholic students in Catholic schools violates the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We also present a modern-day witch hunt in academia over the concept of transracialism. And in Catholic Watch, bishops are to consecrate Canada to the Virgin Mary without anybody else's permission, apparently. And we have more hijabi nonsense afoot. But first, I would like to introduce our guest co-host, Kevin Francis, from our friends at Left at the Volley podcast. Hello, Kevin.
Oh, hello, Randy. Hold on. I need a proper introduction. Can I talk to your audience for a sec?
Sure, if there's anybody listening.
Perfect. Ladies and my name is Kevin. I come from Left at the Volley podcast, and I am bored and happy.
We're losing you, Kevin. You're going to have to do that again.
Yeah.
Oh, you're losing me.
Yeah.
We did, out. Yeah.
And the music and background and everything. Oh, I guess it's not coming through Skype. All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Yeah. Good introduction. Awesome. Totally. You know, God. It was God. God was screwing with the internet. Skype. Yeah. God being Microsoft. Tell us about the Left at the Volley podcast, Kevin.
Well, we're out here in Abbotsford, BC, and Left of the Valley is... What's that?
I put you on the spot right off.
Yeah, Left of the Valley. Right. Yeah, oh, no problem. Left of the Valley is a little fun show that we have down here in the Fraser Valley in Abbotsford, which is essentially the Bible Belt of Canada, because there are actually more churches per capita here than anywhere else in the country, believe it or not. And it's a bit of a lighthearted show. You know, we vary in a wide range of topics. We had some great interviews. It's another atheist podcast that's worth listening, and I encourage you to give us a shot.
Excellent. Yeah, do that. And give us a shot, too. But, of course, if I say that, then you're already listening and kind of doesn't matter. But anyway, spread us far and wide, okay? Spread us far and wide. Get, you know, if you like this podcast, like the Facebook page. If you like either of ours, like the Facebook pages, we both have Facebook pages, right? And... spread us out too, you know, retweet or not retweet. Well, yeah, I'm on Twitter too, but retweet or what's the word for Facebook?
Repose.
Share. There we go. Share. You know, isn't that a wonderful word? Share. It sounds so warm and fuzzy, and it's lovely. Share us far and wide.
And give us a 5-star review. It's all about the reviews now.
Oh, yeah. Give us a 5-star review. And I forgot to start the stream, or didn't forget to start the stream on YouTube. So people on YouTube have no idea what the hell we just said. Yay. way to go, Randy. You know, it's just kind of tough being a one-man band. I did start the recorder, so people on iTunes are going to hear everything we just said. So that's great. But on YouTube, you know... You know, we have with us Kevin Francis. We're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff that I already talked about, but you didn't hear. Too bad. save it for a surprise, okay? Save it for a surprise when we come to the topics. Yeah. It's always hectic. Well, I just went out to see Guardian of the Galaxy, and so I got back, you know, just in time to cook supper. I haven't had a chance to eat supper. Gosh, I hope the...
Yes. What did you think?
Yeah, it was better than the first one. You know, I liked the cameos. I liked a lot about it, and it was fun. It's just a fun thing. It's not, you know, I'm a little tired of most of the Marvel universe. I find it a bit, you know, too much superhero stuff. But Guardians of the Galaxy is a bit different. Mm-hmm. I think I like Doctor Strange too, because Doctor Strange is very different from, you know, Iron Man. I thought Iron Man 3 sucked. I hated it. Absolutely hated it.
Totally.
There's no point to Tony Stark anymore. I mean, if Jarvis can fly everything, what's the point of Tony Stark?
Exactly.
It really bugged me, and I hated it. I liked one and two. One especially because, you know, you get the first shot at Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, and he just does such a superb job. But you get tired of it. You know, it loses its appeal.
You know, the interesting thing about the superhero movie today is the superhero movie today is what the spaghetti western was back in the 60s, 70s. It's those movies that just keep coming back.
Yeah.
So it's that escapism, right? Today it's the superhero movie. God knows in 40, 50 years what it'll be.
Yeah. Snuff films or something. I don't know. Who knows? You never know. You know, you have no idea what the taste is going to be that far out. So, you know, today's movie would be completely incomprehensible to somebody from, you know, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, well, not necessarily comprehensible to people today, but because some of them really, really are terrible. You just don't understand what the hell's going on. But The Last Star, not The Last Star, Rogue One was actually pretty good. I just watched it. But the one just before that, the main one, I just didn't like it at all. Didn't like it.
Mm. Yeah.
There's too many plot holes.
The Force Awakens.
Yeah, The Force Awakens. Rogue One was really good. The only problem is, okay, Rogue One, they fixed the, you know, they actually tell you, they give you a good plausible explanation for why there's this glaring structural error in the Death Star. Okay, that's great. Then they give you a new one by putting master switches where sand can get into everything. Or that you have this, what looks like a Western Digital disc, you know, hard disk. I'm sorry, but do we have technology that's a little more advanced than what we left behind like 20 years ago? You know, like the binoculars that are all in regular definition, you know, like we have high definition TVs, but you're looking through binoculars in obviously like maybe a couple hundred lines of that's it. Like, come on. I think technology would have
been. It's because ocular science never went that far ahead in that galaxy. Far, far away, right?
Apparently. I mean, don't they have building codes in these in you know the imperial hierarchy? I mean, it's a bureaucratic system, right? You'd think they'd have building codes. You don't put a disc player at the top of a tower in the open. Like anyway. So it just created a bunch of new screw ups. I mean, but I'll give them a 10 for being, you know, pulling this back into the mainstream, like a lot, you know, things like it had the same feel, right? All the technology had the same, is at the same kind of level. It's just that the technology was the vision of, you know, 1977 was a little bit different than what we would envision today. And it kind of,
well, I would like to invite all your listeners to listen to the new podcast Criticizing Movies with Dr. Ray.
Yeah, okay. I hadn't planned on going there, but hey, pretty good.
Are you sure we're on Skype or on YouTube?
Yeah, we should be. I haven't given a link. I haven't put a link up. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I haven't put a link up. So people are welcome to listen, but they're never going to find it. Hide and seek. It's hide and seek. Yeah, so we're just monitor it anyway. You never know. Somebody might find this page. Who knows?
Well, I can't monitor it because you haven't set the link.
Oh, that's true. I haven't. Well, don't monitor it then. You have permission to not monitor. Okay, anyway, let's just go. Let's just go into this. Okay. So, you know, we were talking about, have you heard about this, Kevin, the decision in Saskatchewan to not fund non-Catholic student seats in, you know how religious or sectarian separate school systems are funded in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Ontario. It's a per seat thing, right? You're funded, you know, basically how many butts are in the class, you know, sitting on desks or in desks. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
So now they've said that you don't get to count non-Catholic students in Catholic schools. And that is it. In Saskatchewan, it was estimated that some 10,000 students would be, you'd still be, I assume, allowed to be in that school. You just wouldn't be, the school wouldn't be given their budget on the basis of all the seats, just on the Catholic ones. So we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. There's been a development since then. Religiate Premier Brad Wall has decided to use instead of just appealing the decision, which was, you know, Saskatchewan lower court, go to the Saskatchewan Court of Appeals and appeal the decision, you know, and drag this out. I mean, it was already dragged out for 12 years, drag it out even farther. And so just, you know, the status quo instead, he decided, okay, we're just going to use a rarely used clause within the Canadian Constitution Act of 1981, which is the notwithstanding clause, where they can a government can temporarily violate the Charter of Rights and Freedoms for 5 years and override a court decision, no matter, you know, as long as it's only certain provisions of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that are being overridden. There.
Now, you guys have been with this story for a while. Do you think this is more of a it's more like bravado than anything else? Do you actually think this
clown he's playing to his electorate. You know, he's playing to his voter base. Most people, I think, are pretty happy with having a sectarian school system, a separate school system. I'm not, and a lot of people aren't, but who cares what the right thing is to do, and that is to stop administering a separate school system and just have a public school system. You would save money. I mean, one person was saying that there would be no cost saving. Of course, there'd be cost saving. Yes, you would have the same number of students. Yes, you would have the same, they'd have the buildings, but you wouldn't have the same number of school divisions, right? You wouldn't have the same, you wouldn't have the duplicity of school boards, right? Saskatoon has schools where public school and the Catholic school are separated by the gym, and they both use the gym. So they save a little money there. But it's weird, right? It's weird to see that. I don't know. I'm just against the whole concept of a government being involved in sectarian school systems. And BC doesn't have that, right?
BC does also fund private schools, especially religious ones. They do have some funding from the government.
Private schools are different. Yeah, we do that too here. That's a little bit different. But the government actually administers it here.
No, I don't know if the BC actually administers these school systems or not. But either way, it shouldn't happen. I think in the mind of government official, what happens is the more people you have in private and religious schools, then the less you have to worry about, because of course some of the funding actually also comes from the parents. So you can still get all the tax money in the government coffer, but you don't have to distribute as much of it out. So I think that's the mentality behind the government when they try to push this.
Yeah. What do you think, Christine?
Well, obviously, I think that we should have like one school system. So I agree with that. I'm not sure. So what is Brad Wall doing exactly? I don't know if I understand this correctly.
Oh, okay.
So he's going to override the school ruling that they won't fund Catholic, non-Catholic
children? Well, it's a court ruling.
Children?
Right, yeah. So he's overriding on the basis of, he's framing it in the sense of, okay, he said this, we will defend school choice for students and parents. He's framing it as a choice before, you know, you can go to Catholic schools. You can't, as parents, you can't actually vote on, in school board decisions or anything like that if you're not Catholic parent, which is kind of, I don't know. If you're going to send your kid to a Catholic school, you should be allowed to have a say in what's being taught, right? But you're not. Yeah. You're a silent partner in the Catholic school system if you're not Catholic. So they're going to override because the decision was based on a violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and I don't totally understand why that is because I'm not sure whose rights are being violated. But
that's what I'm confused about. Like,
yeah, I'm not completely clear on that at all. And
well, could it be something like denying access to a service based on religion, or you know, not being Catholic? Like, it's discriminatory in a sense, right?
Well, the whole thing started in a small town, and the public school closed, and a bunch of parents got together, decided to make a public or a separate school. So the public school's gone, but there's enough. Apparently there was enough. I don't understand this, because if you don't have enough to have a public school, enough students to have a public school, well, how can you have a Catholic school? But anyway, anybody who didn't want to go to this Catholic school would have to be bused to another school district. And this is deemed a hardship. And it is, because that, you know, that's, it's also a cost the public system, because now you're busing kids to another school district when you already have a school there. So I don't know if that entered into the decision-making process or not. But Brad Wall is saying this is all about choice for students and parents. I don't care. To me, I care about the Constitution and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The NDP, which is the opposition in Saskatchewan, has kind of half-heartedly said, yeah, that we agree, but you shouldn't be using the notwithstanding clause. Now, the notwithstanding clause is a very rarely used sledgehammer. It's only been used a few times, mm-hmm. and in most provincial governments have never used it. And basically says we can override a court decision. But the silly thing is, they still had an appeals process. Why didn't they do that? Because that leaves Alberta and Ontario in a legal limbo. So they don't know if such a case went forward in Alberta or Ontario, would the same decision be made? And so we don't know. It's not a big deal because the status quo is perfectly fine. You just continue on as before. But it kind of does throw some, not indecision, but confusion into the mix. I think you can get rid of the confusion just by getting rid of the separate school systems. I just don't understand why they exist in modern day. So
I also think what's very dangerous about this is the precedent and the message it sends. I think most Canadians are quite leery of having a court decision simply overturned by elected officials. You're saying, the court ruled on this, and you're supposed to obey the law. And what are you telling Canadians when you say, you know what, I don't care, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to use the power to do this? I mean,
exactly.
What is this?
It's a steamroller.
This is not a
banner. It's a steamroller kind of thing. And there was an article in CBC Saskatoon, CBC News Saskatoon. A law professor at the University of Saskatchewan made some salient points. Ken Norman at the University of Saskatchewan, my alma mater for my BSc and master's. And he was very surprised at the use of the notwithstanding clause, because there was an appeals process. Why? It makes no sense to use this if you still have recourse. You still have legal. You haven't exhausted your legal recourse.
This is why I asked a question. If it's just bravado on the part of Brad Wall there, he's just trying to rally his troops essentially. Because like you said, you still have recourse. Sure. Why would you go to that extreme right away?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I might agree with that if it was an election year, but it's not. And you know, last year he was elected again with a majority. I don't know. I don't know. This guy, I don't trust anything with the religion. I mean, this guy uses public funds to create his Christmas messages, spreading the word of Jesus as the premier, not as Brad Wall, but as the premier every year. Mm-hmm. You know, so anything religious, I don't trust him on. He doesn't have that mindset of that the government needs to be neutral. And that's one of the things that was part of this decision, that it violates the expected religious neutrality of the state, which is not in our Constitution per se, but the Supreme Court recognizes it. So we have to, you know, it's kind of outside of, you know, what he does is very outside of what the courts would have us do. And I completely side with the courts on this.
You know, I kind of wish that we had an organization here in Canada that acted a bit like American
FFRF
does.
Or American Atheist, yeah. But FFRF would be definitely the one I would want to see here.
Like, well, yeah, exactly. So I wish we had somebody that would take to task these issues like this and say, you know what, we'll see you guys in court. And I think although we don't have nearly the amount of nonsense that happens south of the 49th, I still think it's
enough
up here in Canada.
Yeah, we got enough of it up here. I mean, we're funding religious schools. You know, why are we funding religious schools? They're private schools, but they're publicly funded. But we'll get to that in a minute. But I want to talk about this one woman in Regina. Considering this decision, this is before Brad Wall said he was going to use the notwithstanding clause. And he said, this woman says her family would consider converting to Catholicism over this if the ruling stood. I mean, what the hell? This is a wonderful reason to become Catholic. Good, interesting.
Well, I think I said that in the last podcast, that they're trying to get more seats than bums and people might convert.
It turns out, I don't even know why this is on the CBC News website, but I mean, it's not really news.
Well, it's a consequence, isn't it?
How many people are really good? Is she really going to, would she really have converted to Catholicism? I mean, seriously, you've got to go to Mass every Sunday. You've got to go to confession. I mean, forget it.
She'd be a perfect Catholic.
What's that?
She'd be a perfect Catholic. Somebody who Just she'd be a perfect Catholic. Somebody who's just there part time, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, it could be a cherry picking Catholic.
Yeah.
That's well, in Canada, there's
most of them anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in Canada, exactly. There's really no such thing as anything a true Catholic. I mean, they don't. The thing is, you for Catholicism, you either accept all of it or you're not a Catholic, except in name only, right? We're not talking like
which
Mexico or something.
Most of them.
Yeah, it's most of. Most
did you guys
Canadians.
Ever hear?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Did you guys ever hear the story about this this imam and this rabbi that goes to the Catholic priest and they say, "Father, you know we have problems with squirrel all over the city, and we have squirrels in our mosque and squirrels in our synagogue." It says your parish doesn't seem to have any problem with squirrels. What's your secret? And the Catholic priest replied, "Well, it's simple. We just baptized and made him Catholic. They only show up at Easter and Christmas."
But I'm dumb. Yeah. So that's it's got to be the
silence.
dumbest reason to awkward silence after bad joke. You're cutting out there, Kevin. Sorry. Have you taken yourself?
Sorry,
you have taken off. Yeah.
You're
back. Yeah. It's weird. Skype is really funny that way.
Yeah.
Why would anybody want to consider becoming Catholic just because? I mean,
well, she's already a Christian, so she's just like, I guess, open to the
process. Consider that a lot of Christians,
a
lot of Christians don't consider Catholics to be Christian. It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, I'm sure you know if she converted her family, it would save them a lot of money and hassle, and you know,
that doesn't save them anything.
And
what's the difference?
Well, because they have to bus their kids
not necessarily
to another school and or pay for them to be in the Catholic system, I presume.
Well, they really want the French immersion.
Yeah.
And that's the deal maker to becoming Catholic. Oh, we got French immersion. Hey, we have beer and cookies. Okay, become an atheist. I mean, way better than just French immersion.
And I feel bad for all these kids going to Catholic school because I went to Catholic school as a lad. And although I didn't realize it at the time, when I think back now as what was taught to me, it makes me actually angry. You know, the different views of the world. And geez, I remember this one time where they were showing us a movie on abortion and how to get us to, you know, rally and write letters to Parliament about abortion. And that's not what a grade 9 or grade 10 should be learning, but, you know, that was a priority, apparently.
Well, it's using you. I mean, it's, what's the term that I'm trying to find? It's
exploiting.
Exploiting,
and
that's
grooming, yes.
Catholic spate. Oh, yeah, I'm trying to make a new word. I'll come up with it later. Cathsploitation. There we go. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say. And did you, wait. So, Christine, you were in a Catholic school too, weren't you?
No.
Oh, you
no,
weren't.
I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
I think we've had this conversation before. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I probably have.
I grew up with quite a few kids that went to the Catholic system, right? Yeah. But no, I never had the displeasure of attending a religious-based school.
Huh. So you weren't a good Catholic girl, Christine?
No. Mom's agnostic and dad's atheist, so, you know.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah. I don't think they would have been very happy to have me in a Catholic school, to be honest. My mom was kind of like was raised Catholic. Mm-hmm. And there's some resentment there on, you know, particular parts of the family on this kind of being encouraged to raise, you know, my mom in that faith and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, Catholic school, probably not in the cards for me.
Yeah, well, my parents are both Catholic and they're still.
Okay.
Free believers, you know, they still go to church and everything, and they pray for my soul every day, I'm pretty sure.
It's not terrible. I mean,
they live
in
a
fear of your soul.
Yeah, it's even worse
soul.
Than that, because especially for my mother, she totally lives in a world of guilt. And, you know, I truly believe that, you know, a life of 1,000 years is wasted when you live it in fear like that. And that's exactly what she's done so far. She's wasted her entire life, and she still is hanging on to this fear that somehow she's going to wake up one day in a fiery pit of hell. It's like, geez, give it a rest. You know,
but all the best people are going to be there. I mean, come on. You really, you know, like Christopher Hitchens is going to be there. I'm sure Isaac Newton is going to be there. Einstein will definitely be there.
What's that line? I'd rather laugh with the sinners and cry with the saints?
From Billy Joel.
What with the saints?
Yeah, Billy Joel.
That's laugh with the sinners and cry with the saints. Yeah. I agree. Of course, heaven would be even worse if it was South Park heaven. I mean, it would be all the Mormons up there. Oy vey. Mormons drive me crazy because they're so superficially, almost like they're lobotomized, you know, they're so nice. I don't know. Am I so cynical? Am I so far gone from being a decent person?
No, they're really nice people. Yeah, you're right.
Like sickeningly nice, though. I mean, it's like Walmart greeter. Walmart greeters, but you're like that all the time.
It's a testament to the power of suggestibility and persuasion, and how people can easily be led into something that is so obviously false and so obviously made up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. If you're brought up in it, you know, you don't know any different, I suppose. And
sure.
Yeah. And like, I know Jack Mormons, right? Kind of like cherry picking Mormons and basically ex-Mormons, and they're still really nice. Like that somehow translates into, you know,
like that one guy that shows up at once in a while at Skeptics in the Pub, and I asked him a few times, does he still wear the underwear? And he's like, yeah, I'm wearing it right now. Because he was out of underwear.
David.
Yeah, he was out of underwear. And I did that twice to him, and both times he was wearing the underwear because he'd run out of underwear.
That's hilarious.
You know what? I don't know. I would rather go commando at that point.
Good point. Yeah, I probably would too.
Depends that stuff on looks the season, you know.
Well, it looks so uncomfortable.
It does.
I mean, to think of wearing under a three-piece suit.
No, I can't say because I don't know a lot of Mormons, but I always get the impression that the niceness of Mormons is, of course, a very, very superficial, because there is more than enough stories of Mormon families being torn apart, especially when you have a child coming up of age eventually that starts, you know, questioning. And there's more than enough stories of kids being kicked out of their houses and completely ostracized by the rest of society. So I think the niceness of Mormons, and like I said, it's only my opinion, but it seems to me to be very superficial. They're flawed just like everybody else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Well, have you ever read, there's a Sherlock Holmes story Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote. I can't remember the name of the story, but it was had to deal with Mormons and how it was a murder. And it was because this guy was a part of the Mormon faith and he was trying to escape it. And he was killed partly because Sherlock Holmes found out who he was. I can't remember the story. One of the original short stories. But so even back then, they were kind of looked at as kind of pretty insidious. But, you know, I got to admit, Joseph Smith went out in a way that is absolutely spectacular. I mean, bayonet stabbings and bullets. Wow, what a way to go. This guy had style. But
oh, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, the history of Mormonism is very, actually very interesting. David Fitzgerald, his book on the subject is quite fascinating.
Dude, it shows a fantastic, fantastic guest and a fantastic guy altogether.
Yeah,
had him on your show?
Yes, we have. I should have him on again. Actually, I really enjoyed it. Enjoy his books. He researches them quite heavily. So.
Yeah, we did a show. We brought him on several times, and we did a show on the historicity of St. Paul with David Fitzgerald, and it happens to be the most downloaded show that we had on our podcast. Yeah. The man is just a pearl. He's just wonderful.
Yeah, he's great to talk to. Yeah, it's good. I don't think I've met him in person, I'd love to have a beer with him. That's a compliment. Let's have a beer. Let's have a beer. I've had a beer with people like John. His name is escaping me now. John Loftus. He did not like my recommendation. He didn't like the maple beer. Sorry, John. I love that beer, but so I wasn't trying to poison him or anything. But anyway, before we leave the story, I wanted to plug my sister-in-law's group, which is calling for a one school system in Saskatchewan as well. I mean, it's a related story. They need more signatures. So anybody, even if you're not from Saskatchewan, sign. There's a cat in the background. Sign the this petition that there's this Saskatoon Star Phoenix story that about them I've got up on the YouTube window, but So it's a group called One System Sask, or One System Saskatchewan, and it's made up mostly of parents from Regina and Saskatoon, and a few from Moose Jaw, Prince Albert, and rural communities, so all over the place. The spokesperson is David Richards. I believe he is a member of Center for Inquiry Saskatoon. And so they're trying to get, you know, the government. You're never going to happen. It's never going to happen with Brad Wall. Trying to get rid of the separate school system. Right now in Alberta, we have an NDP government. And honestly, this is our best shot at it here in Alberta right now with an NDP government. In Edmonton.
That's a good point. So
if you go to onesystemsask.com, I believe, and sign your name to this, they need signatures to try and convince the provincial government to get rid of the separate school system there. I do not understand why we're funding sectarian school systems. And here it is.
I think it's also important to remind your listeners of something about Canadian politics they might not know. When you actually sign something, a letter or an email, if you do it to a local government, the person that receives your email, whoever you're sending it, they assume that you know two other people that agree with you. When you send that to a provincial government, they assume 5 to 7 people that agree with you. And when you send it to the federal government, they assume 20. So it's not just your voice. When you're sending a letter, they calculate the numbers as to gauge what the populace feels. So it's not just you. You're kind of representing 5 other people when you're sending it to a provincial government. And that's important to remember.
There's also the need for a sponsor. If you want a petition to be read out and dealt with by any level of government, you need a sponsor within the government. For instance, the recent one for getting rid of the blasphemy laws, which are still on the books, even though they're not actually applied in Canada and are in the Criminal Code of Canada. We have a sponsor for that. I can't remember offhand who it is. Some member of parliament. So you need something like that in Saskatchewan government to sponsor it. If you can find that person and create and get enough signatures on that, they do have to actually acknowledge it and deal with it.
Yes, and there is also something to say about actually going out there and visiting an MLA or an MP in person and talking to them. That actually is very powerful, and it does sway some of them to see things your way. I mean, they spend all their time lobbying with companies. Why not lobby with people as well, right? I mean, it's totally worth it. Give it a shot.
Yeah, so it's not a forlorn hope necessarily. Okay, moving on. What do we got next? We have some of these sad, nasty stories. Huffington Post, not that I like Huffington Post, but atheist blogger faces 3.5 years in prison for playing Pokemon Go in a Russian church. Like, seriously. 3.5 years for this. Russian blogger Ruslan Sokolovsky he's been under house arrest since last summer, and when he was taken into custody for playing Pokemon Go inside a Russian Orthodox church. Talk about religious privilege. The Russian Orthodox Church has quite a bit of that in the old motherland. He basically put these videos on to Facebook, and he asked on the Facebook video, I assume in Russian, how can one offend entering a church with a smartphone? Well, apparently it does. It's just something else. In fact, they have the actual video on that page, on the HuffPo page. Yeah, and Sokolovsky ended the video by joking, you know, I didn't catch the rarest Pokemon that you could find there, Jesus. They said it doesn't even exist, so I'm not really surprised. No kidding. So they charged him with 3 offenses. One is inciting hatred. Like, really? What in hatred is he inciting? Offending religious believers. Why is that even illegal? And illegally carrying equipment for covert filming. That's really screwed up. You know, democracy in Russia. Sorry, what was that?
You know, an interesting part about this is an interesting thing about this that people are not thinking about this. I wonder if Nintendo opened itself to a lawsuit because of this.
No, well, there's been a lot of problems with Pokemon Go.
Person is executed, do you think the family of this person could actually go back and sue Nintendo?
Well, maybe the Russian Orthodox Church could. I mean, they're the ones who are being, trespassed, right?
Mm.
There's been a lot of this going on, though. I mean, there's been, I remember watching news reports of placing Pokemons in private property around in Alberta. You know, people are forced to trespass
and,
to catch
and
them.
And in a Holocaust memorial site, too.
Oh, lovely.
That's so good. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Mm.
I'm trying to come up with
and
a joke for that.
And, you know.
I'm sure it would be totally offensive.
I'm sure it would be. Okay, I have to say it. My daughter actually, there's a Pokemon character called something to do with gas, and that one was found at the Holocaust site. It's terrible. I know, that's terrible.
A Jukachu.
That was awesome.
What's up?
A Jukachu?
I just said...
No, it's actually called Gassy or something like that, this character. Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah, that would be...
Not cool.
Not cool at all, no. But... It's interesting that the Russian Supreme Court has designated the Jehovah's Witnesses as an extremist organization. I wonder what they think of Scientology. Same with the Mormons, by the way. Mormons, wait a minute. Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists, and other religious minorities, they've come under close scrutiny, anti-extremism laws. I mean, my goodness. And that's not the only atheist that's been... having some issues with their local government. This is from the Independent. Man sentenced to death for atheism in Saudi Arabia. Great. So Ahmad Al-Shamri, he's in his 20s. He's lost two appeals after being arrested on charges of blasphemy for social media videos in which he denounced the Prophet Muhammad. I'm going to do it right here. I denounce the Prophet Muhammad. I don't think he's a prophet. I think he married a 9-year-old girl. That's pedophilia in my book. There you go. He's not a prophet.
You know.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I will.
And I'll join in. And you know, the ridiculousness of this is, you know, your blasphemy, it's such a victimless crime. I mean, so your all-powerful creator of the universe that whispered everything with a word, how gets his feelings hurt?
Yeah. Unbelievable. They're very, very brittle, these deities.
I know. They die very easily, actually. It's about time these two go as well.
Yeah. It's amazing. So he first came to the legal authorities' attention in 2014 after allegedly uploading videos to social media in which he renounced Islam and the Prophet Muhammad. To me, that's called free speech and freedom of belief, you know?
Yeah, I don't think there's such a thing in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, no kidding. Apostasy is seen as a capital crime, and it's crazy. You know, there were a couple of tweets that they gave here that... if you're a low-key atheist, that's fine. But once you talk in public and criticize God or religion, then you shall be punished. So in other words, be a good atheist and keep your mouth shut. Another one said, I wish there could be live streaming when you cut his head off.
Ooh.
Yeah, lovely.
Very nice.
Moderate Islam, folks. Mm-hmm. And this not only has the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia been elected to the UN Human Rights Council, but they are now on the... Women's Rights Council. How the hell does this happen?
Isn't that unbelievable?
And it is. Sweden didn't question this. Sweden, the ultimate feminist government right now. Yeesh, come on.
You think there's maybe some kind of a deal behind this? There's got to be something else that we don't know about this. It sounds like such an outrageous thing to do. It's like, okay, there had to be some kind of a deal behind there somewhere.
You'd think so, but who knows? What they greased a lot of palms, maybe? I mean, there's a lot of oil money there.
Yeah, but if they grease a lot of palms, why would Saudi Arabia go out of its way to do that? To get into these human rights or to get into the female condition of women's councils? I don't understand what Saudi Arabia has to gain from that.
Respectability for Islam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it...
Yeah, it's more amazing. Propagating bullshit.
It'll fool some people, sadly enough.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel that this whole Islamophobia thing and these rights for Islam and all that and the attacks against Ayn Rushdie Ali and all that feels like it's all, I don't know, it's just speculation here, but it feels like it's some part of a big plan for some reason. You know, it feels like it's coordinated to me anyway.
Well, sure.
Islamophobia is a word that was basically invented for the purposes of propaganda. And that organization called CARE, I forget what it stands for now in the U.S., has been, you know, quite the catalyst to put that particular term out in the public realm. Hey?
Mm-hmm. Even right here with, of course, the M103, and I'm sure you guys have talked a lot.
We talked a lot about that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is it that M103, of course, is just a motion, but when the, and I hate to agree with conservatives, but when conservatives went back and tried to have him Islamophobia, and they refused to do so. I don't understand that move. Why would you?
And they wanted to replace that term with anti-Muslim bigotry, which is what it is.
Yeah,
and I think
exactly,
we can all get on board with that. And I don't like the way the media framed it as this conservative issue, because I'm not a conservative, and I was, that the way it was, like we're a bunch of right wingers who disagree with this nonsense.
But they were the major opposition to it, so that's probably why the media painted it that way, because, in the media, it's always black or white. But you're right. You're absolutely right. And I feel, unfortunately, it's going to be left to the atheists and the seculars to actually lead that charge, because it's going to drop in the popular mind. It's going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's
an issue based thing, I think, as opposed to.
There's something very insidious about this whole.
Well, just look at AJ Plus videos. I mean, I get pretty ticked when people put AJ Plus videos on their Facebook, because some of them are okay, but a lot of other times it is pure propaganda. I mean, they're talking about, my favorite was this AJ Plus video. Now, the AJ Plus organization is basically funded by the Qatari royal family. And
it's Al Jazeera.
Yeah, it's Al Jazeera. So the money comes specifically from the Qatari royal family. And there was, my favorite one was this Muslim living in America saying, well, what am I going to get killed for today? Am I going to get killed because I'm a Muslim or because I'm gay? And I'm like, first of all, no one's killed you. I mean, you're alive enough to say what you just said. And second of all, go back to Qatar and find out which one's going to get you killed.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Unbelievable propaganda.
Is it not kind of contradictory to be a Muslim and gay, really?
Totally. Absolutely. It's haram.
Yeah.
Haram, baby.
Although, I guess that's what Majid Nawaz would call the minority within the minority kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, but especially with something is how Islamic women defend Islam very well as well. Especially when you think this religion is so not giving
non-Islamic women defend
it.
That's the unbelievable. Yeah.
There's something about women, the unspoken rule in our society.
Uh-oh.
We've given women the role of being guardians of tradition.
Those letters to.
Just when can I talk?
go ahead. I'm just rerouting those letters from the Legion of Reason to Left at the Valley. No, go ahead.
No, it seems that women have taken on that role, or I don't know if it's society that's put that on them, but a lot of women feel they have the need to adhere to the religion, whether it's to bring up the kids with some sense of morality or something like that, and they become very ardent defenders of a religion which really oppresses them. And that, to me, is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Well, but it's even more mind-boggling when non-Muslim women defend Islam. And not only that, I don't want to seg into to what we're coming up with later, but we're going to talk about that with the hijabi nonsense. It's just this, how do feminists justify defending the wearing of a garment which is designed specifically to either oppress or self-oppress women on the basis of religion. I mean, obviously a misogynistic religion. So is Christianity. I mean, most religions are, but the one group that takes their religion seriously more than anybody else is Islam and their interpretation thereof. I mean, different interpretations are, not every Muslim wears, and not every Muslim woman wears a hijab or worse. So there's this wide interpretation of modesty. But when did modesty become in fashion somehow? It's disgusting, but we'll talk about that. Go ahead.
It's having
I just don't get it. No, either one of you. Just go ahead.
I don't either. I mean, I was going to say not all feminists take that position. Obviously,
no, that's true.
A lot of us are on the side.
But a lot of them do.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them do. And I consider those women to not be feminists. You're not a feminist if you actually endorse the hijab. That's it.
Defend that misogynistic practice. Yeah.
So I think those feminists lie with saying, I have the right to choose to submit.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't have the right to do that without criticism.
In the Western world, yes, they do.
I'm going to criticize the hell out of that decision. And I have that right, too. That's not Islamophobia.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No, there is no such thing as Islamophobia. Let's face it. But
no.
It's a made-up word. Anyway.
Yeah, well, certainly concede
that there's anti-Muslim bigotry, that.
And I'll fight against that, as I know you will, too. You know,
yeah.
What's up?
No, let's save that for the discussion on the hijab stuff, because it's unless you want to go straight there, we could go straight there now. I don't mind, because you know, let's just do that, because we've segged into it. We might as well make use of it, right?
Yeah.
I'll start with The Independent, where Austrian president calls on all women to wear headscarves in solidarity with Muslims to fight rampant Islamophobia. Oh. Goodness. Oh, you know, there's a difference between a right to do something and should you do something. Yeah, it's pretty sickening.
Yeah.
I'm always, I like to, there's that famous line that was attributed to Christopher Hitchens, which apparently he didn't say, but he said, Islamophobia, it's a word created by fascists used by cowards to manipulate morons.
Yeah. That's very similar. It's an analogous saying to religion. You know, religion was invented.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, blah, blah, blah. Alexander Van der Bellen, the left-wing former Green Party leader who narrowly beat a far-right candidate to take office in January. Oh, this is something else I want to talk about, too, because, you know, the French government, the French president has been elected, and everybody's like, yes. Oh, look, all the alt-right thing is going down because they're losing the elections. You know, that's such myopic analysis, because you haven't acknowledged that the right-wing parties are increasing. Their percentage of the vote is increasing. They think the danger's over. Oh, these people are dumb. Christy Winters did this today. She's like, oh, look, it's, you know, Sargon of Akkad, another YouTuber, predicted that Le Pen would win. And he's wrong. Therefore, the danger's past and the right wing is falling. They're like, oh, that's stupid. This is a warning, folks. This is a warning that the right is gaining traction. And
the left doesn't want to acknowledge it.
I think she's American, Christy Winters. Okay. She's a political scientist, for crying out loud. That's her, ostensibly, she claims to be a political scientist. I think if that's her level of analysis, she's not very good at it, her job. The right is gaining votes. There's never been a far-right candidate gone this far in French elections. Just because she didn't win doesn't mean that the right is dying. If anything, it means they're actually gaining popularity. Just crazy.
And you're right when you say it's doubly dangerous, because one of the reasons, one of the biggest tools in the conservative right arsenal for voters is apathy. The more people think they're safe and secure, the less they actually go out to vote, and then that's how conservatives actually usually get in, especially in a country like ours. It's quite obvious that humans as a whole, I think, are more progressive than conservative, yet somehow we all end up with right-wing government. How is that possible? It's apathy. You know, when people stay on their hands and don't come out to vote, and the conservative base does always come out to vote, yes, they win. If people don't, if they stay home, conservatives go in.
Well, look what happened in the United States. I don't blame the voter. There's lots of reasons to be apathetic. The Democrats fielded a subpar candidate. I mean, she was completely, Hillary Clinton was completely uninspiring. I don't give a damn about her emails. I don't care. But she was completely uninspiring. Donald Trump.
Hillary Clinton was 3 minutes. At a buffet that nobody touches.
Yeah. You know, Donald Trump touched on things that the Democrats weren't talking about. And, you know, the PC culture that has come to the fore partly through social justice crapola. And people got sick of it, tired of it. And somebody came talking the language that they agreed with, that, you know, the PC culture has to, you know, is just bad. And I think it has become rather, excuse the term that I'm going to use, toxic.
Mm.
And nobody else was talking about it. And so they didn't care what the rest of his message was. They just latched onto this. People are saying that people that voted for Trump are bigots and sexists. Like, no. They voted for him in spite of that, not because of it. There's undoubtedly sexists and bigots that voted for him, but the vast majority just voted because he was speaking to them. Hillary Clinton never spoke to them.
No.
And then,
yeah, she had this Arab entitlement, too, that really shone through.
Then look at the other choices you had, right? You had What's Aleppo Johnson and what was her name from the Green Party?
Jill Stein.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. And I wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole, all that woo that she's into. Yeah. You don't have much choices down there. I mean, even though there are alternatives, but they're shitty alternatives.
No, it's quite reasonable to say that the Democrats lost that race as soon as they decided to cheat Bernie Sanders.
I think Bernie Sanders had his own baggage. I think he was a problem. I don't think he would have gotten anywhere. I mean, the word socialist, I mean, if you're putting it in with social Democrat, never fly. Never.
You're not going to disagree on this, Randy, but that's okay.
I'm a little more in tune with the Americans. It would fly up here. It doesn't fly in the U.S. Not a chance. Not a chance.
Yeah, they don't understand what socialism is.
No, they don't.
Yeah. They think it's communism.
Yeah, you're talking about a man who had 60,000 plus in stadiums coming to see him. This is bigger than a rock concert.
But that's about all his base would have been. That's it.
Yeah, but the movement on Sanders was not fake either, right? He's still right now the most popular politician they have right now as we speak.
And falling fast because of his recent statements on abortion, et cetera. He's lost the feminists now. They're gone.
Who?
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, he's okay. come out against abortion. He's done. Okay. He's finished.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He would have betrayed the feminist backbone. Yeah, I don't think he's that as popular as you think. He could get people out, but he couldn't get them to vote. There's no way. This wouldn't happen. He'd get them to vote maybe in California, maybe on the West Coast.
We'll never know now.
Yeah, we'll never know, but I think his social stance was too left, too far left. I don't think much of the country would have accepted it. But who knows, you know? Anyway, let's get back to the hijabs. Hijabs, much less speculation. back to the Austrian president. It's every woman's right to always dress how she wants. That is my opinion on the matter. And it is not only Muslim women. All women can wear a headscarf. As if it's just a headscarf. And if this real and rampant Islamophobia continues, there will come a day when we must all ask all women to wear a headscarf. What?
Yeah, really.
All out of solidarity to those who do it for religious reasons. Like, that is... Okay, this is what we mean when we're talking about the regressive left.
Yeah.
This is regressive
as
hell.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure how you're showing solidarity by submitting to an Islamic, you know, a desert god. I think people are not realizing what the hijab really means. They think the hijab is cultural and it's been sold that way. So I think that's why people are falling for this ruse, if I could use that word.
Yeah, some people say it's cultural. Some people claim it's their religious right. I don't care which it is. I don't find it to be useful to separate those two things. It's not useful. I want to talk a little bit about Linda Sarsour, but after this. But this thing about, you know, solidarity. What about the women in the Middle East? The millions of women in the Middle East who aren't given that choice. I mean, you look at Tehran before the revolution. No woman wore a hijab.
Mm-hmm.
They were forced to by law.
Yeah,
exactly. Especially in a country like Iran,
Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, there's lots of Yemen, lots of places where there's not a choice. I mean, the Saudis just let up on women for needing a custodian to sign off on accessing government services. What the hell? Wow. Big. we're very pro women's rights. Yeah, screw off.
I don't know about you guys. Whenever I go into a government building, I probably wish I had a custodian because I always have to deal with some clown that doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about. So maybe you should replace it over here.
Jerry Coyne had his own take on this, and he had a thing titled "Alexander Van de Bellen Can Wear His Own Damn Hijab." it wasn't Jerry Coyne, I guess. It was somebody writing on Jerry Coyne's blog, which, you know, why evolution is true. I completely concur. I mean, it's one thing to show solidarity in Austria with, you know, men holding hands, and that's fine. It's kind of a false comparison between gay rights and women's rights when we know that women don't have that right to wear or not wear the hijab in many countries. Wow.
Yeah, maybe we should start doing this kind of showing solidarity with all the religions. You know, if you're going to be show solidarity with the Jews, maybe circumcision should be mandatory for everybody, you know, to show solidarity. Maybe that'll.
Oh, gee. Was that a seg? Okay, we're going to talk. This is the most amazing thing you're going to hear all this podcast.
Of course, okay. If you practice genital cutting here in the U.S. on boys, then it should not be impossible to understand that there are cultures, there are societies that practice what certain people are now calling gender inclusive
genital surgery. I just don't want it in my culture, in my society. I guess that's kind of what it comes down to.
So it's okay to cut boys in
this
society?
Saying, look, I'm just saying I don't want this because I think it's awful.
Well, we don't, in our culture, we don't discriminate. We have gender egalitarian surgeries. We do not discriminate.
Egalitarian? Gender egalitarian surgery. So because we, in North America, there's been a propensity for male circumcision, that female circumcision is, oh, it's just, it's a matter of equal rights. Like,
this is,
by the way, Fuambe. This is Fuambe Amadu, who is our anthropologist. She's a Sierra Leonean American anthropologist. What do you say to this?
Well, there's also we have to remind that circumcision for boys is, although common in the States and a bit less common in Canada, it's not that common around the world. So it seems very underhanded to come and start talk about equal surgery.
Yeah.
Because it's really what they're trying to get a foothold into the States by using this. You know, I don't think this kind of excuse would fly in Europe, for example.
Well, Germany outlawed it, didn't it? Male circumcision.
Oh, really? I
think so.
Canada, yeah. It's really getting rarer and rarer all the time. The Canadian Medical Association does not recommend male babies get circumcised anymore. The United States AMA does still recommend it, but I have no idea why. To me, it's a unnecessary prophylactic surgery for certain conditions, which introduces the potentiality for complications that are unnecessary. There are some medically necessary, genetic congenital abnormalities. Twyla could speak on that because her son had to get circumcised. But generally speaking, it's unnecessary.
There is no medical board in the world that actually recommends circumcision. And the stats are that if there are any problems that are going to develop, it's about 1 in 200 boys that might develop a problem. So circumcision is completely, completely unnecessary.
Actually, I thought the World Health Organization recommended it to help prevent STDs and
that's ridiculous.
And stuff without
use STDs. A damn condom.
I know it's ridiculous, sex. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I'm not venting at you. I'm venting at the WHO.
No, that's why I'm bringing it up because
craziness.
It's, you know. Yeah.
And it doesn't
and
really
ladies out
it.
There listening, and you should really learn to appreciate the uncut penis. It really is a marvel.
Oh, really? You're gonna whip it out now?
Okay, shall we move along?
Excuse me while I whip this out. Yeah.
I need Twyla here.
Come as a kid and an unnecessary dose of the Legion of Reason, subsidiaries, and
so Linda Sarsour put this, getting back to hijabs, by the way. Linda Sarsour put this tweet out saying that the hijab is a sign of self-respect and modesty, which has an interesting implication to those women who do not wear the hijab, and that is that they are not self-respecting nor modest. At least that's my interpretation. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
It would imply, well, it's implicated.
Sure. I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same woman that...
It's shaming.
Yeah,
you know,
it is shaming.
In a convoluted way.
In a backhanded way. Yeah,
subtle.
Yeah.
It's a microaggression.
Did you see that microaggression thing that I sent you yesterday? That was funny.
Yes.
The stupidest reasons about microaggression I've ever seen. It's a little wonder that Everyday Feminism, the website, is drowning in debt. Good for that, actually. Goodbye. That's not feminism. Give me a break. This is the same woman that said about Ayaan Hirsi Ali that she wished she could take her vagina away, because she isn't a real feminist, basically, that Linda Sarsour herself is a real feminist somehow, even though she wears...
First of all, you don't need to be to have a vagina to be a feminist. I think your actions are going to say much more than your body parts.
Well, I think she said her women's card, like, basically the club of being a woman. She wished she could take her vagina away. I think that was more what it was, not necessarily feminism. But to me, Ayaan Hirsi Ali is infinitely more of a feminist than Linda Sarsour could ever be. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody that espouses Sharia law in the United States is not a feminist. You can't be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it.
No, I totally don't. Although I have heard some people defend Islam, saying that Islam gives them the freedom. For example, in an Islamic family, the male will have control over the finances, and he essentially gives her an allowance. And I've seen feminist or Islamic feminists essentially say, well, you know, this is my money. I don't have to spend it on the kids, so I can do whatever I want with it. So Islam gives me that freedom. And I think, come on, give me a break. Really? Seriously? You know, you have an allowance like a kid now? Yeah, that's pro-women, all right.
Yeah, it's a rationalization of what is pro-woman. You get these claims that Islam is the most feminist of all religions. It's just ridiculous.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, crazy people.
But well, it's apologetics, right?
Sure it is. That's rationalization.
It's a strategy. Yeah. It's part of a strategy to say, you know, the more you repeat the lie, eventually people start believing it, right?
Yeah, it's self-delusion.
That's why they always say, you know, it's a religion of peace. It's a religion of peace. Yeah. A religion of peace. Mm-hmm. And people start repeating it like parrots. Say, no, it's not, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you get people saying that, oh, it was Charlie Hebdo's own fault for putting out those cartoons that they got killed. Like, those people are just despicable animals that don't understand that one is responsible for their own reactions to things. I just don't give a damn. Amazes me. The depths to which they will rationalize in favor of Islam, or any religion for that matter, but especially Islam. It makes for bad people.
The worst part for me, though, is the cowardice that is shown from media outlets after such an event. You know, they will show the cartoons but pixelated, and it's like, you guys are cowards, really. I mean, you've already capitulated. You know, you've already told them, yes, we'll submit to whatever you guys are doing because you guys are angry.
Yeah. Well, it's the
heckler's veto. There's this concept of like shared risk, right? Where everybody posts that, and you know, so who are you going to target? Everybody's posting it, share it, publish it, whatever kind of thing, right?
This is where the internet
to share the risk.
Yeah, this is where the internet becomes the best hope to beat such a religion, because you know, you can always share those memes that has this guy that says, you know, the religion of peace says behind those who insult Islam, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Well, fuck Islam. There you go. I did it. You heard it. You heard it, you Islamists. Yeah. One little other
thing. Send your emails, too.
Yeah, no. Send your death threats, too.
Yeah.
One little other thing on the New... Is this New York Times Live? Website. Star soccer player barred from national women's team in Iran for not wearing hijab. You know?
Yeah.
So screw it, Nike. You and your stupid Nike swoosh hijab.
That's a hero. Because you see these stories come out on a regular basis, right? And it was like that gymnast. I can't remember her name. There was a story about this gymnast, and she's out there. She's on the world stage, and she's performing splendidly for her country, which I think it was Saudi Arabia, and. All of a sudden, the imams are all coming out and saying, you know, we don't want to support her because it wasn't haram. You know, what she was wearing wasn't haram or whatever. It's like, come on. She's a gymnast. She's in her outfit. You know, what do you expect her to wear? A burqa and do those cartwheels? It doesn't happen. You know,
I'd pay money.
These guys are living in the 12th.
Sorry, are you there? We lost. Did we lose?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, oh, you're still cut out.
Oh, yeah, with the sound cut out, totally, yeah.
Cute.
Yeah. I was just saying I'd pay money to see
so
that.
What did you say, Mandy?
In a burqa, you know?
there'd be too many injuries. That would be just totally immoral.
Now, I don't know if you... I'm going to do a quick detour here, guys. Did you guys ever hear... There's a story out there. It's an older story of... you know how television is a big influence in our world today. Apparently, there's a show out there in the Middle East about a school teacher, right? During the day, she's a school teacher, but at night, she puts on a burqa, and she's like an ass-kicking ninja.
Yeah. I've seen
crying,
that, yes.
And she's like, I mean, you react to that? I mean, there's a positive message
it's
about
stealth
a
introduction of the hijab or the burqa
at the same time.
Yeah,
I mean, that's sneaky as hell.
Yeah, it's a bait and switch, right? You know, you a ninja wears an outfit to conceal themselves. But of course, that's true of a burqa too. It's not necessarily concealing oneself, but it's society making half of their population invisible, which makes me sick. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
It's making a disappearing act, which is really, really homosexual if you think about it. Because, I mean, all that's left that are visible are guys.
Well, they're supposed to dress modestly, too. They are.
Yeah, but you can see their faces.
Yeah.
You know, they're not meant to be just blobs of, they're not meant to be ghosts.
Because they have those big beards. They have those gigantic beards, so in a sense, they are covering their face, you know?
I suppose. But, yeah, it's just, for such a homophobic society, I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of gay things.
Not that gay is bad, but in this context, it kind of, well, is. Because they're just trying to erase women. And it's
hypocritical.
And you know what?
It's fucked up.
No offense to the Middle East. No offense to the Middle East, but you guys need more gays out there. Because frankly, I've seen the decorating over there. It really kind of sucks. You guys need more. Put a bit of joy in there because it looks drab as hell. You guys need more gays.
I've been in some pretty nice mosques, I have to admit. In Cairo, I've been in the big mosques in Cairo. Mosque in Cairo. What a beautiful place, and incredibly beautiful. But I also, you know, it's all in the back of my mind. It's this whole thing that they're segregating men from women, and you know, the ugliness of it. The building's great. The religion itself is ugly.
Yes.
Well, much like Christianity.
Exactly the same.
Yes.
Right.
But,
yeah. And the art that came out of it is beautiful and wonderful, and architecture and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the claims when interrogated are sinister, a lot of them.
Yeah. The people are good. The religion is a problem.
Yeah. The people are still good, but the religion makes them do very nasty things, like erasing half of your population.
Exactly.
Moving on. We kind of got one last thing here. One last thing about the hijab, because this is something, especially when it comes to, there's two things. One is Democratic National Convention vice chair came out saying that he threatened on Twitter anyone who dares criticize Linda Sarsour. This is from Heat Street. I know it's from a source that isn't always great, but I've actually verified this. In fact, I responded to this tweet very nastily. he wrote, making it clear, if you keep coming after her, referring to Linda Sarsour, we're going to respond directly, consistently, and with all heart and soul. And my response to that was, bring it, bitch.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Just bring it.
What the hell do they mean?
I don't know. Yeah. You can't criticize
her. Every criticism that I can think of for Linda. Yeah, I want to put it out, but the list is probably too long. So I'm just going to say I criticize her and make my day.
Yeah. And she's pro Sharia law. She's anti-woman as far as I'm concerned. I don't understand why women love her so much. And
well, that threat against Ayaan Hirsi Ali, well, I wouldn't say threat, but that was a nasty thing to say about Ayaan Hirsi Ali.
Yeah. 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 Here's the actual quote.
Who herself was a victim of, you know, FGM.
Yes, exactly. And here's what her tweet was when we mentioned it earlier. Bridget Gabriel equals Ayaan Hirsi Ali. She's asking for an ass whipping. Ass spelled with dollar signs. Jeez, what a. Anyway, I wish I could take their vaginas away. They don't deserve to be women. So in other words, because Ayaan Hirsi Ali, it's deplorable.
Like
because Ayaan Hirsi Ali isn't part of the groupthink, well, she's obviously anti-woman. Like, she must, you know, like, well, bullshit. But
who died and made her a queen bee?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how she got to where she is. And of course, that she was a bit of a problem with the whole women's march because, you know, she subscribes to intersectional feminism, and I do not. You know, women, black
well,
women in the front,
anti-Semitic?
And white women in the back. Oh yeah, she's anti-Semitic.
So, yeah.
She's very anti-Semitic. Yeah, she's not a nice person. Why are they holding her up as the paragon of women, as a paragon example of women? I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
She's a feminist. Yeah. I'm a squirrel. I'm a freaking squirrel. And I hate calling myself a feminist because of women like her. But anyway, okay, there's this is the second thing that relates to Linda Sarsour. Was that?
No, never mind. Carry on.
Sorry. This is my challenge to Linda Sarsour. I mean, she was prominent in the whole hashtag World Hijab Day, where, you know, people should wear hijab in support of women who wear hijab. But it's easy to do, right? I'll tell you something. If you actually supported the choice, Linda, you would take off that hijab for a day publicly in support of women who don't have the choice. And if you don't, you're the hypocrite we think you are.
Yeah, and encourage men to wear the hijab as well.
Yeah.
It, campaign.
She's
My
a hypocrite.
Stealthy Freedom, and they had, you know, men wearing the... Yeah, entirely.
I can't
Why
stand
would
woman.
The DNC support such a polarizing figure?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what bothers me here.
Well, I guess, like, the whole context of political correctness and Islam being a religion...
And don't want to be labeled Islamophobe.
Right? Like, the propaganda has... Yeah, the propaganda has seeped that far into the culture that... defend an anti-Semitic, anti-feminist person.
Maybe we can speculate here that they're maybe taking a page right out of the Republican handbook, because the more extremist the Republicans get, they appeal to their base. Maybe the Democrats are thinking maybe we should do the same thing, polarize. But I think it's just going to fire back on them. I think quite most of their base is actually not.
There's more conservatives than Democrats. That's the problem. You know, there's a lot more people that will where the Republican message will relate to than if the DNC goes full Whirlerman or full Errol.
At the same time,
like Errol's
something
another
like that, they're kind of ignoring the over 44% of all American voters label themselves as independent. By putting out
absolutely.
This kind of message, you basically tell them you're not really welcome in this party,
yep.
And you kind of shooting yourself in the foot. It's a weird move to make.
Yeah, it is, and it's just. They're going left, too far left. I mean, in the wrong kind of left, actually, is a better way to put it. It's the wrong kind of left. They're going regressive left, that you can't criticize people that are Islamic.
I'm not even sure you can consider this being left, because this is, you know, frankly, it is polarizing, but I don't see this as advancing left or progressive in any way, shape, or form.
Well, this is just another version of being called an Islamophobe if you don't agree with us. That's very regressive leftist.
Yeah.
that's the way I see it. I don't know. Okay, moving on. speaking of the regressive left, a philosopher put out an article on transracialism. Maybe, you know, the whole, what's her name?
I can't
person
think
who
either.
Thinks she's black even though she's white. What is her name? Oh, gosh. This has totally escaped me.
Doll is all.
And she's written a book on that, you know, with a ghostwriter. And so in this article, In Defense of Transracialism by Rebecca Tuville, who's an assistant professor of philosophy at Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee, she takes up the question, and it's an interesting question, of whether the considerations that support accepting transgender individuals' decisions to change sexes, which she endorses... provide support for accepting transracial individuals' decisions to change races. I think it's an interesting question.
I think the arguments she brings up are interesting as well.
I think she comes to the wrong conclusion.
No way. Is there some biological... I mean, I couldn't understand somebody being transgender because there is some biological... not function, but some biological background to it.
Well, it's how you feel.
To say you're white and you want to be black, there would be some biological... how do I word this? There'd be something biological about this? I don't know.
I don't think so.
That sounds to me just like... Yeah. It just sounds like me. You just wish you were black, or you just wish you were Asian. I mean, you just like that culture.
Yeah. Well, here's the way the argument goes. One, we accept the following premises about trans people and the rights and dignity to which they are entitled. Two, we also accept the following premises about identities and identity change in general. I don't believe in gender fluidity. I think that's garbage. But anyway. Three, therefore, the common arguments against transracialism fail, and we should accept that there's little apparent logically coherent reason to deny the possibility of genuine transracialism. And I completely disagree with their conclusion, because transracialism is about how you feel. Okay, I feel like a woman. There's something fundamentally different about feeling like a woman and feeling like a man. Is there something fundamentally different about being white and feeling like you're black?
I don't think that's the point of what she's doing, is to make a decision one way or the other. She's doing a thought experiment. Yeah. And making the analogy between transgender and trans
I think it's a false analogy.
Yeah.
I think it's a false analogy. Totally, because I think it's very different to feel one gender or the other, so either cis or trans, but very different. What does it mean to feel black if you're white? Or, you know, yes, skin color is going to have an effect on your experience, life experiences, but that is irrelevant to what does it mean to feel black.
But that's not the point of what we're talking about here. The point is that she was slammed and.
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. We can disagree
with your argument. That's not a problem. We'll publish our papers in disagreement with it if we want to do that.
Totally.
But she got dogpiled.
Oh, yeah, she got dogpiled. So she this was in late March and published in a feminist journal called Hypatia. And then a bunch of other fellow philosophers ganged up on her. 130 people signed a letter, sent it to Hypatia. Saying,
I don't think they were philosophers. I think they were more like
gender studies or whatever.
Gender studies. Yeah.
We know how useful that is.
They were trans philosophers.
they felt like philosophers. There's a lot of armchair philosophers. They were very upset about this, apparently. That's so the letter asked the journal retract the article on several grounds that I don't even understand. Here's one. One, it uses vocabulary and frameworks not recognized, accepted, or adopted by the conventions of the relevant subfields. As if that, no. Like, really?
Yeah, because it's a philosopher that's doing this and not a gender studies major or an African studies major or whatever, right? You know, but philosophy has its own terminology, so that's
right.
That's an unfair criticism, you know.
So what they said was, for example, the author uses the language of transgenderism and engages in dead naming. I don't know what that is. What's dead naming?
That is
a trans
when you,
woman.
Like if you call, she mentioned Bruce Jenner in the context of
hell. Are you kidding me?
That, right. So,
so didn't
a lot
use
of transgender
the new name.
People don't want to be called by their former name. So that's like that name is dead to them. So that's what that means, I think.
Every time I think I could not possibly have less respect for gender studies people. I'm surprised. I surprise myself. This is stupid.
Well, I think if Caitlyn Jenner said, I want to be called Caitlyn Jenner, and you know, of course we're going to call her that, but she is also willing to speak about her
That's like saying the person formerly named Bruce Jenner. I mean, like Prince, the artist formerly known as Prince. I mean, come on.
Well, but the point here is that Caitlyn herself is willing to refer to her past prior to transition as Bruce Jenner, that person's life as a male kind of thing. So she's merely respecting, she's invoking the language that Caitlyn herself has used to describe herself, right?
Which
and publicly
which,
so,
yeah.
too.
But even if she wasn't,
yeah.
this is not a reason to retract the paper. It offended somebody. Oh, who cares?
If it was invading somebody's privacy who wasn't a public figure and she just blurted out some name, but that wasn't the case here. You know, that would be, I don't know, what do you call it? Doxing almost, right? Like if you did it to somebody who wasn't a public figure, obviously. But that's not the argument they're making here. They're, you know.
They're being stupid is what they're
anyway.
Being. It comes down to. Their virtue signaling is what you're saying.
No, I think there would be legitimate concerns if the person that she named was
if
not
they were
a public
outing
figure
somebody. But let's face it, Bruce Jenner. We know
exactly.
who Bruce Jenner was.
Yeah.
Seriously. Okay. Two, it mischaracterizes various theories and practices relating to religious identity and conversion. I haven't read the paper, so I don't understand this one. For example, the author gives an offhand example about conversion to Judaism. I don't understand this, but it's contextual, I suppose. I have to read the paper.
Well, she's making the analogy that you can change your identity. If you want to become a Jew, you can convert to Judaism, yeah. Right? Okay.
But can you do that with being trans? I don't buy it.
Huh? What?
Can you do that just... one day wake up and I'm going to be trans today.
No, I think if you're, I'm not getting your argument here. If you identify as not your gender, then you'd wake up that way.
You can wake up one day and say, gee, I'm going to become Jewish. Can you do that as a trans person?
No.
Have you ever heard of an example?
You would have, that would be your identity kind of thing, right? From birth, I presume.
That's just weird.
Yeah,
it's just
a
weird
comparison. I hear what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying it's not something you just feel like, you know, it's not like putting on, I'm going to wear jeans today instead of cords.
Hey, become a trans Jew?
Well, sure, why not? you just don't go to synagogue. You just, I just feel like it. Sometimes you feel like
kind of a bar.
I don't know. Okay, three, it misrepresents leading accounts of belonging to a racial group. For example, the author incorrectly cites Charles Mills as a defender of voluntary racial identification. I don't think you can just identify as another race. I don't understand what it means to feel black or white. What does it mean? Anybody?
Yeah,
there's a substantial body of literature on sharing experiences of what it means
that's,
to be
that
a
is experiences
minority.
That has nothing to do with your skin color. What does it mean to feel black? Your experiences have nothing to do. Yes, your skin color will have an impact on your experiences, but what does it mean inherently to feel black or white?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think there's such a thing.
I don't think there's anything.
You can ask every 13-year-old wants to be a hip-hopper or hip-hop star or a thug what it means, right? It just means it's the flavor of the day, right? It's just something that's cool, that's fashionable, and that's what they want to get into. That's all there is.
And I think this is the fundamental difference that I have with the whole argument, is that there is a fundamental difference with feeling like a woman or a man, but something inherently about whiteness or blackness I don't think there's anything.
I don't know. I mean, it's just a question.
I can't think of anything.
Obviously, this person is a bad example because she was pretty fraudulent and that kind of thing. But if you are raised in a particular culture, you might identify more with that culture than...
Well, you absolutely would, because A, you grew up, it.
It's a thought experiment. We don't have to, we don't have to argue the point here. Or
I know.
You know, right?
I just wanted to.
What's up?
I just wanted to.
The bigger point is when you feel like you're a man or you feel like a woman or something like that, there's a biological component to this. You cannot feel like you're African American, or you can't feel Oriental or Asian or something like that, because it's genetically there's no difference, right? The Genome Project said there was only one race, and the human race. So you don't have a biological component. So all you have is cultural at that point, and that becomes just a fashion choice in a way.
Yeah, it definitely is a fetish.
Interesting take. Yeah.
So if you take away the experiences, which don't have anything to do necessarily inherently with being black or white, there really is nothing left. But anyway, you're right. We should be talking about the 130 people that signed on to this letter and basically wanted it to be retracted. The shame on the journal. They apologized for publishing it. This is the shameful aspect of this. You're caving in to
that's
a bunch
unbelievable.
Of, yeah. They caved in. They thought it was interesting enough to publish. I think it's interesting enough
and
to publish.
If you want to make your rebuttal, don't dogpile over social media. Put your paper forth and have it peer reviewed.
Yeah.
And make your argument that way, you know, instead of this bullshit.
This is a black eye
behavior.
To academia.
Yeah.
This is an absolute black eye. Disgusting, despicable act by these 130 plus supposedly academics. They know better than this. They should know better than this. If they don't, they don't belong in academia.
But. Well, they're trans academic.
Absolutely. This is where it's gone. Where you're outside the groupthink. You are to be ostracized, shamed, evicted, exiled. This is not right. This is not philosophy. This is not. this is
opinions.
Not, this isn't characteristic of what it means to be a professor. What's going on? What the hell? What the hell?
I show this academic.
Well, now not only are we censoring people that come to speak at on campus, now we're censoring journals. Like, yeah, what the
this
hell?
This is a dangerous precedent.
Yeah.
And, you know, the New York Magazine, they had this thing called This Is What a Modern Day Witch Hunt Looks Like. And that's exactly what it is. It's a modern day witch hunt. And I'm sorry, Rebecca.
Yeah.
I don't agree with your conclusion, but wow, you do not deserve this.
I'll certainly defend your right to, you know, have your publication accepted and published.
Her?
Like, what the hell?
Who's defending her in this?
I think there is a petition that a bunch of people signed, actually.
Oh, good. I hope so. Yeah. Hopefully it's not just people, but people in academia.
Yeah.
Because this throws cold water on free exchange of ideas, as far as I'm concerned. This is, yeah, it makes me angry and fearful at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to see academia go this way. This is not how we should be acting. This is not conduct becoming of somebody with a PhD.
Yeah.
Especially not a professor. Anyway, we ended up ending on a rather sad note, didn't we? I'm triggered. I'm triggered. God damn it.
Well, Randy, as a podcaster, it does kind of make you a trans journalist in a way, doesn't it? You know?
Trans journalist, yeah.
You talk about
alternative facts. I'm a supplier of alternative facts.
We still haven't talked about Catholic bishops of Canada.
Oh, you're right. Oh, yes. Oh, good. Oh, goody, goody, goody.
So we can end on a light note.
Yeah, we can. Really? Okay, yeah.
That's right.
Thank you for bringing that up. This is the CCCB, which is the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops. This rather ticked me off. Okay, this is from their website. The bishops of Canada are invited to consecrate the country to the Immaculate Heart of the Blessed Virgin Mary, apparently not her spleen, as part of the celebrations marking the 150th anniversary of Confederation. Who the hell died and asked you to do this for us? I wasn't.
You know
asked.
What it reminds me of? Like the Mormons when they do the baptisms and you know,
yeah,
after
Mormon
die
baptisms.
And stuff like that, and against their family's wills and all this kind of stuff, right? Yeah. That defy, you know. Yeah, it's like, who gave you permission to do this in the name of me, a taxpayer?
We know this doesn't do squat.
Sorry, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. We know this isn't going to do squat. I mean, it's like prayer. I mean, it doesn't do squat. Baptism, it's just water.
Yeah.
But it's the principle. This is what gets me pissed off. It's the principle. Who the hell asked you to do that? I live in Canada. You're doing this in my name. How dare you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And might I add, there are so many better deities out there. I mean, the Virgin Mary gives you salvation, but if you go to Ibu Gogo, Indonesian pygmy god, he gives you salvation and a pig.
Oh, cool.
So I think, maybe we should just help the aunties like that.
I'd go for Egyptian gods because they are into cats. I mean, I've got 8 hungry cats that I got to feed after this. But Dionysus is right up there, for sure.
There we go.
Consecrated to Dionysus. Give me that wine, baby. But, you know, this is just bugs the hell out of me when religious people think that they're doing good without bothering to ask me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's part of Canada's 150th celebrations. And, I didn't give my permission for this nonsense.
Sure.
I hope not a single tax dollar is going into this bullshit.
Yeah, it would be interesting if that happened. Oh, ugh.
Virgin Mary was probably a trans woman anyway. I mean, I have no idea. She's a trans deity, you know.
She was trans pregnant. Oh, gosh. Yeah. They probably like, Joseph, you got me pregnant. Now what? Oh, well, just tell them that. It was Immaculate Conception. They'll believe it. Really? They're never going to believe that.
You ever see that meme on Facebook that says, it's a letter from Joseph to Mary. It says, Dear Mary, just admit you slept with another man. This is getting out of hand.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on, Kevin. You got anything? Do you want to add anything coming up on Left of the Valley?
Well, we just had a show yesterday, and we had some fantastic guests. Who are they again? Oh, yes, it was you guys.
Brown noser.
No, we always have some fun guests. Next week, our guest is going to be the Bible geek, Robert M. Price. I'll be coming and we'll be talking about the historicity of some people in the Bible for sure. And then in the month of May, we'll also have our good old friend, Dr. Daryl Ray.
Oh, I like Daryl.
He deals in sexuality.
Yep. He's a good guy to drink with.
He's a hoot. He's also one of the high priests of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and we'll be talking about hypnotism in church. So that should be interesting as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that sounds absolutely fantastic. Yeah, so thanks again, Kevin, for being on. Of course, thank you, as usual, to my lovely co-host, Christine Chalska.
And thank you, too. That was fun.
Albeit internally misogynized.
Internalized misogyny, yeah.
Ugh, what a term. How to make feminism unfalsifiable. All right, so I guess we'll be back in 2 weeks. Probably another potpourri episode, unless I can wrangle up another guest. The first few months were really quite... we had a lot of guests, and we had to get back in the saddle and contact people. I know who I want to contact, so we'll get some people on soon. And well, thanks for everybody for listening in. And what were you going to say? No, nothing.
Trans goodbye.
Trans goodbye. Yes.
Stay tuned for more exciting episodes of the Legion of Reason.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. And cook up. Get some more baby recipes on the in the podcast. All right. So thanks for being on.
Fantastic.
We don't eat cats, though.
No, we don't eat cats. No. Yeah. My kitties are sacred. They are sacrosanct. All right.
Just babies.
Yes. Yeah. Just babies. Excellent. There's no hair on babies.
Sure, no.
I guess I should also tell you, I'll put in a shameless plug real quick. If you guys want to follow our Left of the Valley podcast, you can always follow us at leftofthevalley.com. Follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, at LATV Podcast. Send us an email at leftofthevalley@outlook.com.
Oh, yeah. I keep saying I'm on Twitter, but I don't tell people what the handle is. It's Legion of Reason. There we go. One word.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And you can follow me there. And I do some different stuff on there because there's always some fun stuff that the Creation Museum is putting up that I have to retweet or something. I'm unfortunately been booted from Ken Ham's Twitter feed.
I'm sure you missed out. So are you guys coming to BC anytime soon by any chance?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
We're getting together or something.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you get them into Calgary, we'll be here for sure.
Yeah.
Perfect. Great. Okay, road great. Trip. Hmm? All right.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for being on. See you, who knows when. I guess we'll have you on again.
You might regret this.
Yeah. That's been good.
You've been listening to The Legion of Reason coming to you from Calgary, Canada. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please consider reviewing us on iTunes. Music was provided by Dean Morrison and Graham Hill and used with permission.